Welcome back to another episode of NFT Catcher Podcast. We'd like to remind everybody that nothing on the show is meant as financial advice, and to please do your own research. Thank you, and enjoy the show.
Now the subject is NFTs.
They're known as non-fungible tokens, or NFTs.
NFTs are exploding in popularity.
This is a technology that will forever change the way people interact.
So it is happening whether you understand it and like it or not.
This phenomenon is moving the digital.
You have now joined Jenny from the blockchain and Michael Keen on the NFT Catcher Podcast.
What's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the NFT Catcher Podcast with me, Jenny from the blockchain, and my co-host, Michael Keen. For today's interview, we have Kath Simard. I really hope I pronounced that in the best French way possible. She is a composite landscape photographer, and I would say the most popular artist in NFT photography in the space. So we are pumped to have Kath on. I feel like she doesn't do podcasts often, so we're really excited to have you join us. Kath, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much. Really excited for this conversation today. And thank you for the kind words. Like, that's a pretty big statement to say.
It's definitely true. It. Right, Michael?
I'll take it.
Yeah.
What was the exact? So the most popular... What was the exact? And
basically the most popular NFT photographer.
Yeah, very right up there. I mean, we could talk about Justin Aversano. We could talk about who else? Who else could you talk about in that breath? Would you say
maybe?
Drift hasn't been quite as active, but he's an amazing portfolio and has done incredible things. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, whatever.
Anybody else? No, you're right. I mean, no, Kath is you. You're.
I'm thinking.
I mean, you're right there in the breath with everybody. You're amazing. Yeah, for sure. What I love about your photography, we'll talk more about it, but the length you go to get your shots, like you go to these extreme places. I've been watching that for a while. I'm a traveler myself, so I've really loved watching you travel, going into Patagonia, and I think I remember Tasmania one time, and obviously like up in Canada, and like. But I love it. I love that you go like deep, deep, deep to find these crazy places. But yeah, I'll let Jenny continue the intro, but absolutely.
No, yeah. I mean, I'm done with the intro. And I know Michael is so pumped to talk about traveling because he is such a traveler. He's been, let's see if I get this right. Over 60 countries?
No, Michael? Almost 50. Almost wow. 50. That's my 50. Quote. Yeah.
So Michael's pumped about, you know, getting into that. But first, I wanted to start with what is composite photography? Because I'd actually never heard of it before you.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So composite photography, I would say, is the action of, instead of capturing a landscape into a single shot, it is the action to capture different elements of either a specific scene or different areas or even different areas of the world and then putting everything together. So I would say that there are like different layers to composite photography. I know there's also some people that do it in a way that it's overcoming camera limitations. So for example, they will, you know, capture the foreground with the mountains and then the sky separately, but pretty much at the same time and then put everything together to create something that is of a higher quality. But for me, with composite photography, it's never about staying completely true to reality. Like, I like to flirt with that line between reality and imagination. And I actually like when people don't really know that my work is composite, because my intent is not necessarily to provoke like an emotions of like, oh, this looks like a collage. Like, I actually want people to look at my work and be like, oh, like, is this real or is this not real? Or like, it makes them stop and stare and really like question what's in front of them. So yeah, I would say this is the best description I have for composite landscape photography.
And then what got you into that specific area of or style, I guess, of photography?
So I actually started landscape photography, just like more regular landscape photography, traditional, back in 2016. And very quickly, I found myself just like capturing different elements and putting them together in post processing. And I had no idea this had a name. I thought everyone was doing it. So for example, sometimes I would get frustrated because when you do night photography and you're trying to capture you know, the beautiful, you know, foreground and the sky at the same time, this can introduce, it's called a lot of noise. So it introduces a lot of like grain and noise. And I was frustrated by that. And I just developed kind of like my own techniques of capturing the foreground during blue hour. So when it's still quite dark, but it has this nice like blue cast, and then capturing the sky separately and then putting things together. So I just kind of like started experimenting with this and sharing my work on social media. And people were like, wait, is this composite? I'm like, what do you mean? I don't even know what's a composite. Like, I didn't really realize that it was not a common practice amongst landscape photography. So I would say it's just naturally, it just really came to me naturally to experiment with that medium in this way.
Okay, so you started posting your work on Instagram probably, right? 2016. I feel like Instagram was so popular in 2016, like that whole era. And then when did you start minting your work? And I feel like, and a lot of photographers too, it's like, how do you make a living off of your photographs? You know, a lot of people, they'll share them for free. And now it's like NFTs kind of solved this problem. But who like introduced you to NFTs?
Yeah. So, well, actually before NFTs, how I was making a living, I was mostly leading photography workshops. And then when COVID happened, I couldn't lead any workshops anymore because, you know, can be with other people in groups and stuff. So, and it's kind of like around that moment, early 2021, I believe it was January 2021, Dave Krugman, I saw he was posting about it. And then I asked him a couple of questions. I even asked some questions to Justin Aversano. And then I just started spending a lot of time on Clubhouse.
I remember on Clubhouse in the rooms with John Knopf and Farouk. I remember those days. I was there back then. We talked about that a bunch. I was there back then for sure.
Good old days. My God. And I just was fascinated by that like underground culture of crypto and NFTs. And for me, it was during a period where not a lot was going on. Like I had just released like a course, an editing course, but like I was not really doing anything. So I just went all in, and I have like a very obsessive personality. So when I get really interested in something, I just spend way too much time. So like 12 hours on Clubhouse listening to people, and then like forcing myself to jump on stage to talk about me, and actually like podcast and talking about my work is really not something I was doing before. So it was kind of like a practice, Clubhouse, to learn to talk about my work and to learn to, yeah, just like, I think it's a skill to learn to talk about your work. And I think a lot of artists struggle with that, but it is essential, I believe, to develop this skill. So that's how I started. And then kind of like went from Clubhouse to Twitter. So then I made a Twitter, and then, yeah, I just started sharing my work there. And I actually took 4 months from like the moment that I learned about NFTs up until my first mint, because I really wanted to take my time to understand, you know, how things are working, like what's the best approach. I really like to observe, gather as much information as possible, and then make up my own mind when it comes to like doing anything, really. I'm not a very impulsive person. I'm more like slow and methodical. So that's the approach that I took. And also for my Genesis collection, it was composed of 4 images. And one of those images included an in-person trip with me back to where I captured the image. So I kind of like pitched that to Super Rare. And then they were like, yes, we want you on the platform. And like, they loved the idea. So I think I was like the third photographer on the platform or something. And then, yeah, launched my Genesis collection. It sold. And that's how it all started. It's nice to think about it retrospectively. Yeah,
that's awesome, and congratulations on all your like success so far in the space. I saw your Super Rare video, or I don't know if you have a couple, but did somebody like follow you around, or did you kind of like submit the clips of you traveling?
So I actually did a couple of promotional videos, for example, I don't think for my Genesis collection, we had footage of me hiking. However, I did release, I think you're referring to a promotional video I did for a release on Nifty Gateway in 2022, where I actually hired a videographer to follow me in Patagonia. And then we took like some clips of me hiking, and this was like this entire kind of like production that we shot during blue hour. So it took us like 2 weeks to film everything from this like 3 minute video. And, I think I've also learned to develop a little bit more of like the marketing skills, when it comes to NFTs. And that's something that I have learned to slowly like. I know like a lot of artists despise marketing, but I do feel like there's a way to make it in a way that it's fun. So for me, this was promotional video. So most of the promotional videos that I have done, you know, over the past three years, I have done like the artistic direction. It's usually like my ideas, or like my ideas mixed with the editor or the videographer ideas. And then it's all very collaborative. So it's almost like an extension of my art. I really try to view it this way instead of this like demonic evil thing that artists needs to do. So I think it's more about mindset and finding a way for you to make it work as an artist.
You bring up a really good point there. We've talked about this in the past, and even with artists that like independent artists, they really, a lot of them just want to make art. They love making art. It's all they want to do. I know some of the most amazing artists, but they have a hard time, you know, getting the word out there and spreading it. Like you have to wear many hats as an artist. You need to know the tech. You need to obviously do your art. You need to market, know the tech. You need to network. There's definitely a lot to it. Connect with your collectors. Yeah. Now, I don't know. What kind of advice do you have maybe for artists that are trying to get that footing, and they don't like marketing, but how do they find something they could love to do to help themselves?
Yeah. So I think the first thing, maybe in relation to what I just said, is find a way for you to do something that it's at least a little less painful maybe to do. So if for you that you love networking in person, but you hate texting or chatting online, then maybe for you what works is going to in real life events. And that is how you will do your networking mainly. But also, I really think it's about learning to push yourself as an individual and do the things that you don't want to do. So for example, like I said, like for me, like doing podcasts and interviews, like I enjoy it in the moment, but it has like afterwards, like negative effects on my sleep or health, whatever. But I just learned to do things that I don't want to do. And I think it's more of a mindset. Like I think that with NFTs, you just have to push yourself. You have to learn all the different things. And I don't know, maybe that's just like a mindset I've had like even way before NFTs and pushing myself to, you know, hike 60 kilometers to get a shot. I think for me, maybe I'm used to do that, but I think maybe I have taken the same approach when it comes to NFTs. Like I didn't want to jump on space, not on space, but on stage on a Clubhouse, but I still did it. Like I didn't want to do marketing at first. I didn't like it, but I still pushed myself, invested my time, and I did it. So it's more about like learning.
And you've seen the fruits of that. You've seen the fruits of that as well, obviously. So that's definitely good. I love that. It's, I mean, that's all really good advice. What I took from that is you do not want to be on here. You hate being on here, but you're pushing yourself to be on the podcast.
I love you guys. I'm having a good time now.
Good. That's what we want you to have a good time. That's our number one goal for sure, is for that's you to it, have fun, exactly. Enjoy yourself. So
yeah,
absolutely. That's a good answer. That's really good insight. Like I definitely find that interesting for artists, because there's so many artists, and then they, you know, they look at some that are successful. How'd you become successful? Because you pushed yourself. You marketed yourself for years. I mean, I've seen it. Everybody's seen it. And Jen talked about it. But like those Clubhouse days, that's what that was. And you were meeting collectors and all that stuff.
Yeah. It's definitely like, you know, it's a line that we need to navigate. It's like you don't want to fall into a place where you're just hating it so much that you're like, you know, I'm done with this and I'm leaving NFTs. But you really need to learn to push yourself as an individual in all aspects of your life. And I think that's what really helped me navigate this space. And yeah, like marketing, podcasts, even in real life events, I'm actually very shy in person. I'm extremely introverted. But like I found a way to make that kind of thing work for me. So for example, I'll get a room by myself during those events, and then I'll come back to my room twice during the day. So I will sacrifice, you know, some, you know, networking opportunities so I can focus on myself, recharge batteries, and then go out in the in the wild and then, you know, be recharged. So I think it's also about learning, you know, what works for you, putting boundaries, and, you know, you don't need to go all in a way that it's not fun for you. You just really need to make this work. And I think for me, I view all of those little parts as like, it's part of the game. It's part of like what you need to do to survive in this space. Right. So it's like, well, if you're an artist, but like you hate Twitter and like you never want to be on Twitter, like, I hate to say this, but Twitter is, it is where you are showing your art. It is where people get to know you. That is like the main hub. So if you don't want to do it, I just don't really know if that's going to work. So you need to find ways to push yourself to make it work.
Well said. Okay. Speaking of surviving, cause you travel alone, right?
Most of when I can, like there's some places that I can't be alone, but I try to be alone as much as I can. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you, I mean, okay. I feel like I wouldn't do that because I would be so scared. Like, what if something happens? I'm all alone. Like, do you ever get like, oh my God, it's just me out there? Like, you know, I don't know. Have you ever had scares when you're out there just alone traveling? I mean, and you're traveling in these like remote areas. There's not like other people really.
Yeah, I have had a few like scary encounters when I was alone for sure, which I can tell you about. But I think like at core, I'm someone who seeks solitude a lot. Like I'm probably the most solitary person you'll ever meet. Like no joke. It's just, I crave that solo time. So for me, it's way more scary to be traveling with people than traveling alone.
Really?
Even being out with other people. Like I think it's nice to have this comfort, you know, if something happens, but I just prefer to be by myself, especially for creating. Like I see an insane difference in my work when I'm with other people versus when I'm alone. Like I always create better work when I'm alone. So yeah, that's like more about like my work. But when it comes to, yeah, like sometimes I will get scared. Like for example, there is this one hike that I did back in 2019, I believe. And I was hiking alone at night, 2 a.m. And I was like halfway into the hike. And then I kind of like see some like two eyes like in the distance, maybe like 10 meters from me. And then I just shine my headlamp and I see this massive like silhouette and it was a bear. So here I was 2 a.m. face to face with a freaking grizzly bear. So of course, like I was scared, but like I remained calm and then I had my bear spray and then I backed up. I made a lot of noise and then I stupidly decided to go back because I really wanted the shot. So I just decided to go back up and the bear was gone. But yeah, I think this was definitely a scary moment for me because you don't really have control over the wildlife. And, you know, on trail, sometimes you need to climb up stuff. And if you're alone and you fall and, you know, you're unconscious, then you don't have anyone with you to help you. But I always try to take precautions. So I have this device. It's called a Garmin. And you can contact the emergency service if anything happens. So I really try to, you know, still be very careful with that. Let people know where I'm going. Let people know when I'm supposed to be back. So I'm definitely not careless. And I know that there's a lot of dangers related to that. But for me, the benefits outweigh the dangers when it comes to like the creation of my art.
You are literally risking your life for your art. You're very courageous. That's amazing. Okay. And then also I was wondering about, you know, you're like, oh, I'm very careful. I have, you know, this little thing. I can contact emergency. What are like essentials that you pack in your big backpack? Cause it's like you are literally carrying everything on your back. And how heavy is that thing?
Yeah. So it depends if I'm doing like a sunrise hike versus a multi-day hike. Maybe I can go through like a multi-day hike. So for example, I did this trek in Tasmania that was 8 days in self-sufficiency. So I need a tent, a sleeping bag, a sleeping mat. I need 8 days worth of food, clothing, and then all of my camera gear. So for sure, like this adds up a lot. So usually when I go in self-sufficiency like this, I try to stick to like one lens if I can. So camera body, one lens, batteries, battery pack for my phone, and then tripod that's also usually pretty heavy. And then just like, I don't know, just some stuff, like emergency kind of like kit if anything happens. I've had a backpack up to 60 pounds, but there was not so much hiking involved. But like when I go into those long distances like this, I try to keep it around 40 pounds. And I'm 120. So yeah, the one third of my weight. And then, Jeez. You know, up and down. And it's usually not just like flat. Like you're actually climbing a mountain with that weight. And yeah, you definitely need to be fit.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're very fit as well, which is, I mean, I feel like that's the most important thing. If you're hiking, you need to be fit so you can actually hike.
You better know what you're getting into in those kind of places. You brought up some good things. Well, Jenny's actually going to Peru soon. Should we? I don't know if I should say
it. I was going to bring that up, but I'm going to Peru.
That's probably why she started talking about the solo traveler.
And I love
Kath, it. You'll let her know. When you travel the world and you travel all over South America and everywhere, you meet solo travelers of all kinds from all around the world. And you absolutely need to take precautions when you're out at night. If you're out partying, that's when things happen. But yeah. Like, you know, people travel the world to almost every corner of the planet and have amazing times solo by themselves, men, women, you know, all kinds of like traveling. Like watch YouTube videos. I always suggest people, because I've learned a lot about traveling. Just watching people travel in YouTube videos is really good. You know, if you're going to a place, it's probably good, Jenny. I could actually suggest to you a couple YouTube videos about Peru. She's going to Lima. Well,
so okay. I'm not solo traveling to Peru.
You're meeting people there.
By myself there, but my dad's living there right now, so I'm going to like meet him. And then my sister, who's been traveling the past month, she's in Colombia right now, she's gonna also meet me there, so I'll be with my dad and my sister. But what are some, and we're going to Lima, what are some like places that you highly recommend? Yesterday I just heard I should go to Rainbow Mountain, but yeah, I don't know if you have any other recommendations.
I think you need to fly to Cusco, but Kath will tell you, because I'm looking at your Peru picture right now. I was going to ask where you took this, but yep. She needs to fly to Cusco. Tell her where she needs to go. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, so yes, Cusco is like a really good place to go and to acclimatize. And then, so I've been to Peru twice. The first time was I stayed more around the Huayhuash region. So that's a trek that you can do in between 7 to 14 days. If you look at my portfolio, I think all of the images right now are from this specific trek. And I have to say, I usually don't create like a lot of work. Usually I'll go, you know, 7 days in the mountains. I'm lucky if I come back with one image. But on that trek, every single freaking viewpoint, like everything was always so amazing. I came back with 6 images that I've never had this in my entire life. So I would say if you're looking for a trek, that's just insanely beautiful, not too crowded, I would recommend the Huayhuash trek.
Yeah, Jenny's looking for a 14-day trek. That's what she's getting into.
You can do the 7 days. I think I did the 7 or the 8 days.
I'll only be there 7 days. But
yeah, but if it's 7 days, it's still doable. Plus, like when I did it, we did it in a way that we would wake up at like 2 a.m. every morning to reach out specific viewpoints that we would shoot for like blue hour and sunrise.
This sounds like what Jenny's getting into on this trip.
I'm just like thinking of my dad. I'm like, I don't know if my dad is going to
no,
want that.
I know. This is a bucket list adventure, what you're talking about. This absolutely is.
You don't have to do it this way. Right. Actually, the guy that I had, he was like, never in my 20 years of guiding did I have clients asking me to do this shit. Like, there's even one time we left, I think at like 11 p.m. to reach a specific viewpoint that I wanted to shoot like during the night. And he was pissed off. So this is not normal. Like normal people, they will just, you know, wake up in the morning, have a nice coffee and breakfast, and then, you know, trek during the day. So we did it in a way that was very unconventional because it was photography focused. But yeah, I really recommend you doing this one. Rainbow Mountain, I think, is also another good one. There's many, many tours that go there. I would recommend getting on an earlier tour before it starts getting really busy. But Rainbow Mountain is amazing. And apparently there's a new Rainbow Mountain that I haven't done, which is very similar, lesser known, and still as beautiful. So I would also research for the new Rainbow Mountain. I think you might have a better experience, maybe a little less touristy. And Cusco is an amazing city. Like there's a lot of tours that start from there. So I definitely recommend staying there. I stayed there for a couple of days on my second time in Peru, and I was acclimatizing there before doing a portion of the Ozagante trek. Ozagante trek is another trek that I think would be really good. I think you can do it within 5 to 6 days. So something shorter, still as beautiful. So those are my two main recommendations, I would say, in terms of treks.
Sweet. Nice. Thank you.
Yeah. No problem. And you know, Machu Picchu shut down right now. They're protesting on the railroad tracks because the government's trying to take over ticketing for the Citadel and the people, you know, Machu Picchu. Did you go all the way to Machu Picchu when you were there? Or no, you know, okay.
I haven't had a chance.
Honestly, like all the ruins in the Sacred Valley, like Ollanta Tambo and Pisac, that's all like it's all the same stuff. Machu Picchu is amazing, but it's way deeper. You can't drive there. You have to take the train. And it's like this one little town that's just there for the tourists, and they make all their money, and the government's like trying to stop that, and they're like going nuts. Yeah, pretty crazy.
Maybe by the time this comes out, it'll be open again. Maybe. Yeah.
Who knows? But even going to Cuzco and just down into the Sacred Valley, I think is really spectacular. Like, Lima's awesome. Lima's fun. I didn't do Rainbow Mountain. We did the Nazca Lines. Those are really cool.
Cool. I have never heard about that.
Yeah. Oh, the Nazca Lines? Check that out. NASCA in Peru. It's these ancient, they're gigantic, and it's like glyphs in the ground. Look up Nazca Lines in Peru. Oh, yeah. And like people think it might be like alien runways and stuff. It's like, it's really interesting. Oh, yeah. The Nazca Lines. Very interesting. Yeah. So how do you choose your locations? Do you do you pick a trek and then you find the shots? Like some of those ones in Patagonia, they look almost like they would be like, you know, postcard shots that are like standard tourist places. But do you know the trek and then you're like, this is my spot? Or do you have something in mind usually?
Yeah. The inspiration for picking my locations comes from like many different places. So for example, there's that one place in Peru that I picked because I found a remote red lake on Google Earth. So that's how I picked it. And then I did research, and then I realized that there was ways to get there by trekking. But sometimes other places, just like trip reports, Facebook groups, like there's a Facebook group here in the Canadian Rockies. It's called Scrambling in the Canadian Rockies. So people would just go out and then come back from their trips, post photos. So it's either, it can be anything. Maybe a blog post about a specific area, maybe like a documentary. I see like an image. And so, yeah, I would say it really comes from all different places. But as far as like picking, I really go with my gut feeling, intuition. Maybe something will inspire me one day and then I will just follow through. So, yeah, I think it's, and for Patagonia, I mean, I've been there, I think, 4 or 5 times.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I've been there many, many times. And especially within the El Chalten region, it's Los Glaciares National Park. And the last time I was there, I actually spent almost 3 months down there. And for Patagonia, actually, like the weather there is really difficult. Like if it rains, it can rain sometimes for 10 days and you don't even see the mountain. I mean, you can go out and you can still have a good time, but like photography wise, it's very difficult. So sometimes, you know, I would get out for 3 days and then come back and then be stuck inside for 10 days. So that's why like it accumulated over 3 months. And I think out of those 3 months right now, I've only released 2 shots. I think I have 1 or 2 more, but it's still not a lot of images like over like 3 months spent somewhere. So. And then usually I'll just like make a lot of research. I think research is something that isn't discussed a lot, but it is definitely very present, even like with more traditional landscape photography. I think there's like 2 types of photographers when it comes to landscape photography. Like there's photographers, they don't really like to know too much in advance, and they'll get somewhere and they will capture, you know, what's in front of them and then get inspired. But for me, I actually prefer to pre-visualize exactly what I want, even before going there. And then when I get there, I have a plan. Okay, I want, you know, a branch in the foreground to frame the scene. So then I'm like focusing my attention on finding a branch that could be a good fit. Okay, cool. Now I need to photograph the middle ground, maybe some like cool plants in the middle ground, background. Okay, now I need to photograph the mountains. And then I need to stay maybe like overnight to photograph the stars and or the moon or stuff like that. So I like to pre-plan everything in advance. So very methodical. I'm not a spontaneous shooter at all. And that's not my, my strength. So if I go somewhere for a first time, it's really rare that I will be able to capture something in the moment. And if I am, that's because I've done like a lot of research in this area.
Yeah. That's so cool. I love that. In your travels to Patagonia, have you been to Bariloche?
I have not, no, but heard a lot.
Oh, yeah.
No.
That's like my favorite city. We actually talked about it on the last podcast with Austin from IYK. I'm sure there's a lot. Like, I haven't been to Calafate. I haven't been to all the other ones.
Yep.
But Bariloche, like, I was there for a week. We were there this time of year in January. So it's, you know, summertime. It's light until 10:30 at night. And it was incredible there. I mean, you know, obviously the scenery, but like everywhere you look, there was a new mountain, a new lake that was completely different than the other one. And there's like the Road of Seven Lakes. You do the hikes. I do the drives. It was like the Road of Seven Lakes, like Siete Lagos or whatever. And
you know what? It's good to know that you can drive and still see beautiful sceneries. Because
incredible. Incredible.
I think about, you know, I don't know if I want to bring my family or like people that don't necessarily hike a lot. And I feel like you kind of need to hike in El Chaten, but it's good to know that in Bariloche, you also have the...
You can see Bariloche is incredible. And then the town is awesome. It's known for like chocolates and there's great steaks there. It's awesome.
Have you been to Torres del Paine?
No, I've been to Iguazu. I have not been there. I've been to Mar del Plata and Buenos Aires two times.
Yeah.
That's where I've been. That's where I've been in Argentina.
Yeah. Torres del Paine is a beautiful place. There's this famous trek. It's called the W Trek. I have not done it, but it's like a very popular trek to do around the mountains. And it's also a place where if you just drive, you can see insane sceneries. There's like, I think they're called guanacos. Yeah, there's guanacos everywhere. There's
the little animals, right? They're like the big
rat
kind of things. Yeah.
Yeah. There's like a bunch of, they're like in between. I don't know.
Yeah, they're a rodent, but like a big giant rodent. Yeah, they're cool. They're fun to see running around the forest. We used to see those all the time. I've seen them.
Yeah.
They have different names. They're all throughout like Central America too. Coites, I think they call them in some places.
Yeah. I only know about guanacos, so I'm just
going to say. Yeah. No doubt. Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Love it down there though. It's so amazing. Yeah. No, that's incredible. What else we got going on? What do you think the future of Web3 and NFT is for artists? Are you bullish that like digital art, NFT art, what do you think is going to happen in the future? What do you think all the different chains now, it's kind of becoming confusing for some people. Do you think that this is really like, what's the future? Either way, what's the future do you think for digital art?
Yeah.
Look into your crystal ball.
Yeah. You're in it. I know like, cause it was like, you know, in 2021, if I would have asked you that, digital art's the future, everything's incredible. Like, all these artists are coming in. It was a different thing. We all had the giant bear market that we're coming out of now. I'd like to know what you think is going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I do think that it's still the future of art. I think that we need more collectors to sustain this ecosystem because so many artists coming in. And, you know, I think like from a tech perspective, identifying art on the blockchain makes a lot of sense. That's like common sense. Like you want that. I'll just give you like a quick example. I had someone like a couple of weeks ago, he was like, oh yeah, like I went on your website and I right click save your image and I printed it. And I was like, okay, you can't do that. Because for me, like my physicals, some of my physicals are limited edition of 50. And now you're kind of like, you know, affected this. And that's where I was like, well, that's why the blockchain makes a lot of sense, you know, to authentifying what is the supply of this specific artwork. Now the physical supply has changed because you printed it. And that's just not something that we have control over. So I think in terms of like the tech, it makes so much sense. I mean, you're just seeing like so many companies like coming in but I do feel like there's so much artists for so little collectors. And that's a conversation that I've been seeing quite a bit. And it's so interesting because for me, before NFTs, I was not collecting anything. Like I'm a minimalist. Like I just don't like to buy a lot of things and or collect even. I'm very, like I was living in my car for 6 months and I was perfectly happy with a couple of clothing and stuff. But when I started selling my work and when I started like seeing how, you know, I don't know how happy people would be collecting my work. And then I got intrigued. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to start collecting as well. So then I started collecting and slowly but surely I really got the feeling. I think it's a feeling and I'm not really sure how we can ignite this feeling and desire in more people. But I think this is what's needed because there's a lot of people that have no desire to collect anything. Why would they collect NFTs? You know, so sometimes it starts with physicals. So for example, my parents, after I started with NFTs, they slowly started buying physical artwork from different artists. And that's not something they were doing a lot before. And now it's like, oh, well, because they are because they're seeing me collect, because they are, you know, seeing how this is fun and to support artists, it's like, I think it's contagious. So I feel maybe like on a smaller scale, this can be done like peer to peer, but on a larger scale, I'm still wondering how we'll be able to achieve it. So we just need, yeah, more people to come in this sense, I would say. Yeah. I don't know if that answered, but.
No, it definitely answered. It definitely answered. No, that's good stuff. I had actually one other follow-up with that, and somehow it slipped my mind. So I'm going to let Jenny talk right now, and hopefully my question comes back to me.
Yeah. What's your next trip that you're going? Do you know the next place you're going to?
So I have a next trip planned with my parents. It's not going to be like photography focused, but I will be back in Peru this summer. So I'm hoping to spend 2.5 months there. I want to start doing stuff that is a little bit more difficult on the physical side. So like maybe start touching a bit more on mountaineering and developing my skills there. I think I have my skills when it comes to long distance, you know, self-sufficiency stuff. But when it comes to mountaineering and equipments and ropes and stuff, like I don't really have this expertise or knowledge. And I really do believe that if I can develop this, then I can access more difficult spots and more unique spots to photograph as well. So that's really what I'm going to be focusing there. Yeah. So Peru, honestly, I'm just very excited to be hiking and I'm not even going to put myself like too much pressure to take photos. Cause I think that, so for example, if it's a trip just for developing my mountaineering skills, like it's very difficult to pair this with photography because with photography, you need to be at specific angles and viewpoint at specific time of the day. So it's completely different purposes. So I might do like, you know, half photography and then half mountaineering. So yeah, will be a lot of fun.
That's really cool. You definitely inspire me to hike more. Hiking is my favorite physical activity. I've never done like more than like a day hike, like maybe more than a 5 hour hike, honestly. So yeah, you make me think about, oh my God, that would be cool to like do a whole, you sleep there and then you wake up, you keep hiking. Like that seems very like you're in tune with nature, you know, cause you're like truly in it. You're not like going back to your car to, you know, then drive home. Like you're just there.
Disconnected from internet, disconnected from social media. Like that's really when you realize that we're all addicted to social media and the internet. Like it's just so crazy. And for me, sometimes, you know, like after one day or two, I'd find myself scrolling on the last loaded posts on Twitter. You know, it's so, it's almost automatic. And personally, like when I come back from those trips, whether it's like 2 days or more, it just gives you a sense. It's like a mini detox and it gives you a sense of peace that I'm always so calm and not, like the anxiety has left my body after those trips. And I think it's paired with no internet, no social media and physical activity. So I think the effects on the mind are absolutely insane. Like the week following me, like when I'm back from a trip is always, I am in the greatest mood ever. Yeah. So a lot of benefits from that as well.
Do you talk to yourself when you're out there alone and you're like
1000%?
Okay.
Oh my God.
I would totally be talking to myself the whole time.
Yeah. It's the best because like also when you're walking, you're, well, at least for me, like I'm either listening to a podcast, music or silence. And sometimes I just like to have conversations with myself. And I'm telling you, like, I can solve so many problems on the trail when I'm just talking to myself and like, okay, well, that's all I have to do now. Solve my problems. And I've also come up with some really good ideas while being on the trail. And then I'll just like write them down in my phone. And it's almost like it's like a meditation because you're walking, it's a pace. And then you're just like in this like creative zone, like in your brain. And then you can come up with a ton of crazy ideas when you're not bombarded by like the exterior world, or even like, you know, hiking with other people doesn't really allow me to do this. So I guess that's another thing that I like. It really helps me get in touch with myself when I'm alone, hiking versus with other people. It's a different kind of fun, I would say.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. All right, Michael, did your question come back to you?
It did. Well, it wasn't actually a question. It was a comment on your answer from before. And when you said that there are so many artists and so few collectors in the digital art space, and I may think that's almost kind of how the real world is too, isn't it? Isn't there, you know, there's so many artists, you know, you go to these art festivals and there's so many artists trying to sell stuff, and some people are buying, you know, a lot of people are just looking.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's perspective for those people. Like, you know, if you're in the real world, yeah, go ahead.
It's possible to convert non-collectors into collectors. Like, I'm the proof.
Yeah,
My parents, and then so it's more about like keep sharing the passion of collecting, or like supporting other people. Like, I just really love the idea that purchasing an artwork was able to support an artist who maybe, you know, drive further or like do whatever they want. But it's just not something I was doing before. So I think finding the pleasure in supporting other people when, like, to the extent that you can as well. Just a little parenthesis, like, I think back in 2021, I saw a lot of artists almost totally reinvesting everything they had made into other artists. And then when the tax season was there, they were all not in a very good position.
Yeah.
It's always like, invest back only what you can, right? And, and it's not even, you don't even have to do it. It's just like, you know, be mindful with that, because we don't want to perpetuate this idea of like the starving artist, right? It's like, it's good to help other people, but help yourself first.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Take care of you and your family, no doubt.
Yeah.
No, I love that. I love that. Do you have any bucket list trips that you sometime in the future, like Tibet? Tibet's mine. I want to go to Lhasa. That's like my number one city. Like, but do you have anything like that that you
bucket
do?
List. So I'm actually going to Nepal in November, but nice. I've done Nepal before. But I'm planning on doing the Everest Base Camp or the surrounding of the Everest region.
Yeah, and that's like 10 days in from Kathmandu, right? That's a long one.
Yeah, and but the trek I was looking at is actually a total of 20 days because it's like goes like towards it's called the three pass trek. And then you go to the Everest Base Camp, and then you do.
Wow.
So it's a bit longer. But bucket list, honestly, I've been thinking a lot about Alaska. And Alaska is like, from what I heard, is so difficult to travel to. It's so remote. Like, the wildlife can be very dangerous there.
Yeah, if you get so way up out, because Alaska is so big. People don't realize how big Alaska is and how north it goes.
Yeah. And I heard that, like, if you want to go to specific parks, you need to fly there, so it's really not an easy place to navigate. But to me, that what's make it even more exciting. I'm like, yes, like the most remote, like that's what gets me like very excited. So that's definitely high on my list, but I think it would require a lot of research and planning, which maybe not for this year, but maybe potentially for next year. Greenland also is another place I think. It's been photographed a little bit, but again, it's, you know, it requires a lot of hiking or boating in between like each fjords. And so I think, I would love to go there and hike. But I heard that the mosquitoes are absolutely terrible there. So that's
in Greenland, really?
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. It's like full on nets the entire time. So
I'm
pretty good with that, but there's a point.
I'm not actually. Mosquitoes love me. Like, I am not good with mosquitoes. They love me. Yeah.
So I think it's like, yes, push your limits, but I feel like I mosquitoes would drive me closer to craziness than actually like the hike or the difficulty of the hike. Like the mosquitoes, mm-hmm. are just next level.
Yeah, no, I love that.
Yeah,
this is why your art resonates so much with me. It always has, because you show what goes into it. If it was just an image, it probably wouldn't resonate quite the same with everybody. But the fact that we know that you are hiking like crazy and putting yourself to the limits to get these amazing images, it's really impressive. I love it. I really do. I love your whole story. Yeah, definitely.
Appreciate it. I think, yeah. like, for when it comes to behind the scenes, like, at first I was very hesitant because I was almost frustrated that landscape photography, I'm not saying that's what you're saying, but what I'm saying is that what I have noticed is landscape photography is a medium where people want to see the behind the scenes. And I think I do think it's part of the story, but I find it interesting that there isn't this demand or requirement for other mediums. It's like, I don't know, like, are we asking for all of that extra stuff to painters or like other? So I think it's almost like a blessing and a curse. It's a blessing because it helps people connecting with or work more, but it's a curse because there is an expectation for people to see the behind the scenes. So for me, it took me a long time to embrace that. But there's a point where I was like, you know what? Fuck it. You want behind the scenes? I'm going to hire somebody to follow me. And I'm actually going to be projecting a film in New York about a trek that I did in Peru. And being in front of the camera for me was, again, huge outside of my comfort zone. Wasn't pleasant. I didn't want to do it, but I did it because I knew it was important for people to understand the nature and what goes behind it. And yeah, anyways. So I think that when it comes to like behind the scenes, it's great. And I do feel a little annoyed sometimes that there isn't the same expectation for other mediums. But I do think it's also an advantage that we have, that we can include this like very real human, you know, challenging part of the story into our.
It's kind of funny. We talked about the most popular photographers. You brought up Drift and you guys are similar in the fact that you both do very risky things to get the images you want. And his is a little bit different because he almost doesn't even need to show the behind the scenes, because what he does and showing it with his foot, like, he's like, I got up here. You know, you can almost imagine the behind the scenes with his. It's kind of interesting. Yeah, it's really, it's cool.
He does record a little bit with like his GoPro and stuff. And I think that his work and in the kind of stuff he does translate very well into video, because it's like, you know, you're getting vertigo and it's very, like,
yeah. Oh yeah, I've seen some of those ones where he's up there. I am not good with heights.
Yeah, exactly. And even some of his drone shots is like so spectacular.
But for me,
I think the effort is like, how do you showcase the same extreme effort over 8 days in the mountains? It's like,
I know.
Always on the ridge hiking. So it's
right.
It's a different kind of, you know, extreme side.
Totally.
Doesn't translate as much in video. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah, I think behind the scenes they're cool. I do think that to stand out as an artist, they can add a lot. I don't think they're a requirement, but I think it can definitely help for sure. Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay, my last question before we get into gas wars is, what is your favorite NFT project and why?
My favorite NFT project. I like the squiggles a lot. I love Eric. I love Snowfro. The squiggles were one of my first trade. So in 2021, I traded a one of one, for squiggle with these. And,
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's just always been part of like my story in this way. You know, they're OG, art blocks. I don't know. I just love them. I think they're like a classic. And I think also everyone loves them. Yeah,
I'd love to have a squiggle. I've been eyeing up a squiggle for a long time. It'd be very nice to have one.
I have a squiggle too, so okay, I'm biased, but
she's pumping her bags here, folks.
I'm pumping my bags.
She's flexing on us.
That's all I'm that's happening right now. Yeah.
Actually, if you go on my Instagram page, the image is a squiggle. It's my squiggle. So I'm also trying to rep this in the Web2 space, and people are asking, and like my squiggle, it also
you know where a good Go ahead.
It looks like a little mountain ridge line. So I like it also. It's almost like a good representation of what I do. So it's my trademark now.
The best place to put those is in your email signature. Kath Samar, the little squiggle right under it.
So true.
Yep.
I'm gonna
That's
do
what
that.
I would do if I had one. I have it right in my signature so people know.
I love it.
CT does that. Oh, yeah. I see your Instagram. That's cool.
Yeah. I've had a few questions about it. And every time it's like,
like, what is that?
Squiggle? What do you mean? Y'all know what's a squiggle?
You don't know. Okay. Let's get into our Gas Wars segment, which is our rapid fire question segment where we each ask 5 questions and that may or may not have to do with the NFT space. So,
okay. I'm a turtle. I'm a very slow person. So I would guess, just I haven't had plenty, but
it doesn't have to be ultra rapid fire.
It doesn't have to be like super fast. All right. I will start.
She's nervous.
I'll start with something easy. What is the first NFT you ever owned?
It was a pug that was gifted to me by 33 NFT, which is a collector. I won some sort of contest and that was my first NFT. And then I gifted to my brother as his first NFT.
Aww.
Random pug from an artist. I don't even remember his name, but yeah, it was. Yeah.
Nice.
What is one food you can't stand?
Oh my God. One food. I like everything. Oh my God. I like everything. Wow. I like everything.
Okay. That's awesome. Like,
You know, I used to be the most picky eater as a child.
When you were in Nepal, were you drinking like the yak's milk and all that? And you're good with all that kind of stuff? The yak butter, all that they do?
I never tried that.
Okay. That's a good, I know I was looking at the ride one time I was going to go from Lhasa to Kathmandu and there's like a 6-day car ride that they'll take you on. And like when you stop in these like tents and that's what you're eating is like, they're like, you're going to get like yak butter and yak milk.
You know what?
Like,
I would probably eat it and I would probably love it. I spent 3 weeks in China and we only ate local food and I can't even, one thing I didn't like.
Everything was amazing. That's awesome. And how about like the fermented shark in Iceland? Do you ever go for like that crazy
I've
stuff?
I've never tried that. You know what? This might be.
That's not good.
One step too far. Yeah. No.
It tastes like motor oil or something. It's not good.
Okay. No. Yeah. So maybe the shark.
Fermented shark. Okay. Let's see. Oh, who is your favorite musical artist to listen to while hiking?
Petit Biscuit. Petit Biscuit.
Are they French?
Yeah, so it's like an electro group. Honestly, I've been listening to them since 2017. If you go on my website, I have a video portraits of me was my first video portrait and we were using one of their soundtrack. Yeah, it's just like really cool ambient electro. It's kind of like epic. I would say maybe the second one, M83. Maybe you know that band. M83. It's like also.
I remember them from the ticketing industry days. I don't know the music, but I remember they used to play Red Rocks. I remember that.
Yeah. So I would say those just like epic feel good music that you can watch like during sunrise or sunset that makes you feel like you're in a movie. Yeah. Those are the bands.
I like that you said the most French name ever. And Jenny was like, is that French? No, that's Chinese, Jenny. That was Japanese.
Jennifer.
Yeah, that was Japanese.
I actually did take French for 2 years in high school, so I know a couple of phrases. But you're fluent in French, right, Kath?
Yeah, that's my first language. Yeah, I've actually. Okay, I learned my English while traveling. I think.
Oh, wow.
Back in 2014, a little bit. Like we do learn English at school, but it's so basic. It's like barely anything. So it's really while traveling. Yeah.
In Canada, right? You're from Canada.
Yeah, I'm from Quebec. Yeah,
Quebec. So
that's like the province that where people oddly speak French, and then the rest of Canada speaks English.
Yep. So, what is your favorite comedy movie?
Comedy movie?
Or movie in general? If you have a favorite movie, you want to shout.
That makes it even harder.
Oh, okay. Then.
You made it specific.
It looked like it was hard to begin with.
You know
what? And then
I'm gonna give like a childhood movie. E.T.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
I think I just like when I think about like movie that I loved as a child, like I just love and
Drew Barrymore and that as a classic.
Yeah. Yeah. And like even the aesthetic of it, very blue and dark. And I'm like, huh, maybe this movie had an influence on my style. Like it's very like focused on night and surreal. And Yeah, I guess also maybe Avatar. I love Avatar. Yeah, it's tough. I haven't watched a proper movie in maybe a couple of years. I just don't watch that many movies. I'm so busy. I watch like stupid TV shows to like have my brain pause for a second because there's all I always have like stuff happening in my brain, so I need those like stupid reality TV show. But yeah, it's a tea. Or maybe like also I recently talked about The Exorcism.
What? The Exorcist,
like the scary
Exorcist
movie.
Yeah,
The Exorcist.
Oh,
yeah.
Hell no,
scary movie. Oh yeah, I love.
Yeah, you like scary movies?
I love scary movies. Oh, yeah,
I shouldn't do that. I literally cannot sleep. I get nightmares. I'm so scared. Like I'm like, oh, maybe I should just pull an all nighter. Like I literally get so scared if I watch anything remotely scary or reading a book. I read like, what was her name? Oh, anyway, it was like a murder. It was like based on a true story. She got accused of murder, but I literally could not sleep. I was like so scared. I'm like, why did I read that? Anyway,
yeah, I like the movie. I like the adrenaline it provides.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a weirdo.
Okay. What was the most unique pet you've ever owned?
Pet?
Yeah. Have you ever had a unique pet? Yeah.
I've never had a pet, but
you've never had a pet?
No, my parents, they have a dog.
What?
And her name is Zoe. Small golden doodle mini.
Aww.
Yeah. But when I was younger, I actually used to play with frogs quite a bit, like toads and frogs. So we had like this little place like next to the house. It was like a hole, and then I would just collect all the frogs and then put them there, and then I would like play with them and build some like houses and weird stuff, and I would make them compete with each other. So I guess they were my pets. I don't know if that counts, but yeah.
Counts. She asked the weirdest one, so that counts, right?
Yeah. You know, he asked for a weird. I actually have videos of that too, so I have proof. But yeah, I know. I don't know why. I love frogs. And maybe that's because a lot of them, they're like kind of like grossed out. But for me, I think they're so cute. So
they are cute. Nice. Yeah.
What's the favorite app on your phone?
Favorite app? Ooh, mm-hmm. I think worst. Google Earth.
You like to explore it where you're going, looking through. Yeah.
Oh my God. Cool. Yes. In my free time, I just like zoom in, zoom out. Yeah. I love this. And then
have you ever seen those people that could be shown a screenshot from anywhere on Earth from Google Earth and they could tell you where it is in like a second? It's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah. They like put a dot on the map and it tells you how close they are. And they're usually like so close.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like the Google Earth because it really shows like a lot of different angles, and then sometimes it even shows like the map, and so I can discover. Basically, I'm traveling through Google Earth.
Yeah, I know you can do that. You can walk through the streets of foreign cities, like really exotic cities and remote cities, on Google Earth. Like it's amazing. It's amazing doing that. Yeah, I agree.
Yep. Shout out Google Earth.
Is it just like those cars that have?
Yeah, they send a car down the street. Yeah, exactly.
And they just literally go everywhere. Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, not everywhere. There are, I mean, you can't go like, you know, into like
the more remote place.
Pyongyang, North Korea or whatever. Pyongyang. Yeah. Why am I getting that word wrong? But, you know, you can like there's places you can't go. And there's like ultra remote places where it stops and there'll be like dirt roads and you'll see it like not go down that one or whatever. But like it goes a lot of places.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Mapping the whole Earth.
Yeah.
All right. What is a book that's changed your life?
I don't really read, I'll be honest. I actually get this question a lot, and I was like, okay, I don't really read. No, I'm more the type of person that will scroll through internet or social media and then stop and read like a crazy article about a fun health fact, or like listen to a podcast, or for example, like I love Andrew Huberman podcast. He teaches a lot about health, science. So I would say like maybe not the book, but the podcast that has had the biggest impact, just about all of the things that you can learn about health. I would say he's number one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a great podcast.
I'm not a huge reader. I have really bad ADHD, and usually after page one or two, I just need to stand up and go for a walk.
Dude, I'm exactly the same. I haven't read a full book since high school. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm the same. Wow. I listen to some books, but I don't read books. I can't read books. I think I have AD. I've never been diagnosed, but I'm pretty sure.
I was just diagnosed, so it was pretty cool to just like get confirmation of that.
Yeah.
You know what? Like, I don't know if that's a book, but I don't know if you guys know about the 16 personalities, like the Myers-Briggs test. I don't know if it's a book, but it's a test that helps like identify different personalities. So like they both, introversion versus extroversion, intuition versus sensing, thinking versus feelings, judgment versus perception. And that has really helped me understand the people around me better. My friends, my family. And now I can spend half a day with someone and be able to tell like in which category they fall. So
what's your Myers-Briggs?
INFJ.
INFJ. Okay.
You?
The first one, I've taken this a couple times, and the first one I either get introvert or extrovert, but I think I'm an ambivert, which is like both.
Yep.
So, but the other letters, I'm N, I think, and then F, feeler, and then I'm not a judger, perceiver, P.
P? So, yeah. And are you, so you said you're in between like extroverted and introverted.
Yeah.
So you would either be an ENFP or INFP. I can see it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love being like alone, and I don't know. But then, you know, when I'm around people, I do feel very energized. But then I'm also like, that's enough people, you know?
You're probably an ambivert. Yeah, for sure. Maybe like you're very close, like your percentages are very close from one another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to be way more introverted. But then my sister, she's so extroverted. And she's my twin sister. So she's kind of like rubbed off on me and helped me be more extroverted. So I think that's why it's kind of changed over time. But anyway.
Yeah, I love everything related to psychology and self-improvement. And again, like it's just little things that I read online and then it stays with me. And I'm also big on therapy. Like I think everyone should do therapy, and it's just like an amazing way to view yourself from another perspective. And for me, when I started, it's like a veil has been lifted and I got this insane new perspective, and there's a lot of positivity in doing therapy and having somebody like, you know, that's a professional bringing you new perspectives. And I don't believe that it is only for people that, you know, feel sad or depressed. Like, I really think it's just like another tool of personal growth and self-growth. So yeah, I think anything related to, you know, cool facts about self-growth or psychology, I just really like that. And the Myers-Briggs actually, I like my friends, they always laugh because I'm kind of like obsessed with it. And I just love that stuff. I'm like, you are more censored than intuition, or like you're going to do something or say something. And it's just nice to understand better the people in the world around us. And I think this is a great tool for that.
I love that. I have my bachelor's of science in psychology, and I didn't even really want to go into psychology as a career. I was just like so interested. I'm like, I just want to learn what I'm interested in and then, you know, see what happens from there, which I didn't end up doing anything with it. But I feel like I really learned a lot, and I, you know, carried into my life. And
yeah.
Anyway. But yeah. All right. Michael, what do you got?
All right. What is the best hike you've ever taken? What is one hike that just like, that was?
Oh,
best hike I've ever taken. I'm going to say my first ever scramble. So a scramble is basically like you're not on the trail. You just make your way up the mountain off trail. And so that was back in 2016. And I met up with like a bunch of people I didn't know. And it was like, I don't know, organized this through like a Facebook group. And then we met up and I'm like, okay, this is the peak we want to go. So then we start making our way up, like bushwalking, and it's super cool and different for me because it was my first time not being on the trail. Like, man, this is kind of dangerous. I love it. We just keep going up, and then we reached like a specific area, and then that was basically the goal. And instead of going back down, we're like, oh, actually, let's stay on the ridge and try to make our way to it. Was we could see a glacier lake and the glacier a little bit further away. So our goal was to get like above this on the ridge and then have this crazy view. And we ended up hiking for like 10 hours. And along the way, you know, up and down, doing like using my hands and seeing some like undiscovered glaciers. And then we reached that specific viewpoint finally. And it was like one of the most beautiful viewpoints I've ever seen, like glacier transforming into a lake, transforming into this massive waterfall, going into another blue glacier lake. And I took a shot and I was like, okay, like that's what I want to do. So this was very early on in my journey, and that specific hike had a huge impact on what gets me excited in life. And it just really triggered something. And yeah, so that was in Banff. And I remember finishing the hike, calling my mom, crying. I'm like, I can't go back to Quebec. Like, I want to stay here. I love it. Like, I feel like this is my place. And that's one of the reasons why I ended up actually moving here, because this hike, this trip, and this area had such a huge impact on me that I'm like, I belong here. So yeah, that was a crazy trek. I haven't minted anything from that because it's a little bit more early work, but I do want to do something meaningful and go back there, maybe a film or whatever, and explain, you know, this feeling. But yeah, Banff awesome. Is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy
where,
place.
Where are you living now?
Calgary, but I used to live in Canmore, which is more like in the area. It's maybe 15 minutes from Banff. But yeah, Calgary is like the main city close to the mountains, and just, yeah, great.
My birthday was in July last year, and my twin sister and I, we went to Calgary and we went to Banff.
Really?
And yeah, and then we took like mushrooms and we were like, I literally was like, this is the most beautiful. And
right?
It wasn't just the mushrooms, but that kind of enhanced it. I was like, this is the most beautiful place I have ever seen. Like the mountains, the view, we went kayaking, and oh my God, I was literally blown away by Canada and Banff specifically.
Yeah, that area just has something. And it's so funny because there's a lot of people that live in Eastern Canada, so like Quebec, and then they go one time to West, like either Alberta or BC, and then they never come back. Like that place has an effect. It's like the aura. I don't know. It's like the energy is just very pure, like very positive, very calm. And I just feel so much better here in the mountains versus back home, which is kind of sad to say, but I feel like I belong more in the mountains.
Things move slower in the mountains than they do on the coasts.
Right.
They definitely do.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, and it's very, you know, everyone is so, everyone is doing outdoors activities. It's part of the lifestyle to be out in the mountains. And I feel like I definitely identify more to this versus East. Yeah.
Okay. My last question is, what is a piece of advice that you live by, or like a saying that you live by?
I think so. There's two that comes to mind. There's this quote, life is an echo. What you send comes back. And I think that's very true for everything in life. It's like the energy you put out will come back, but don't do things just so things come back to you. So I guess it's maybe related to karma. Like I really believe in karma, and that's just something that I try to keep in mind in every aspects of my life. I think something also more recently that I have discovered that is very important for me is authenticity. I think that we, especially with social media, we live in a highly curated, you know, space where we only show the good sides and very professional. It's not that you need to be non-professional, but, you know, it's very highly curated and you only see maybe a little bit more serious side of yourself. So I think that you can be authentic and show the multi facets of your personality online, and I think authenticity actually helps people connecting with you. So I would say, like, don't be afraid to be authentic. And if that's by shit posting on Twitter or making jokes or, I don't know, being goofy, like it's okay to be imperfect and, you know, to not like fit with the I don't know, high society standards. And finally, I would say maybe, be patient. Like I think FOMOing is never good for anything. I truly think that for me, taking my time with NFTs, waiting 4 months to come up with a plan, has helped me with my career and my success in the space versus if I had just come in and mint something right away and just, you know, don't really have a plan. I think that taking your time and being patient pays off quite a bit, even with trading. That's what I have learned. Like, I have FOMO sold the bottom many times. And I was like, if I had only been patient for things to go back up, you know, I would be in a better place today. So patience is like, man, it's difficult, especially in NFTs. Everything goes so fast. Like, 1 minute feels like 1 second. This is very, it's so fast paced. So I feel like if you can be patient in this fast paced environment, it will be like very positive overall. Yeah. Love that.
Mm-hmm. All right. My final question is, what is something that you are afraid of?
Something I'm afraid of. Sometimes I need to remind myself that I'm afraid of things. public speaking. I really, really suck at it. But again, it's like it is one of my biggest fears. I have done it before and it was extremely uncomfortable. But like, I had time to plan. But like, let's say maybe like a spontaneous public speaking. So let's say the speaking panel, the death of me. Like, I literally die. Like, this is insomnia for a month after this. Like, yeah, I'm not really sure why, honestly. I think maybe I can be comfortable speaking with people on a one-to-one or like small group, but like in front of a big audience, I tend to freeze. And I have so much respect and admiration for people that can do that so comfortably. So I know that this is a fear that I will need to beat for my own sake and even my career. But you know, one step at a time. I'm going to stick to podcasts for now.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah, right. There's a bunch of people listening, but they're not all watching you.
That's
so
it.
It's like,
this is like the first step for me. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This was a blast. I had a lot of fun. We went a little bit over, got a lot of really good information, and I had a lot of fun chatting it up.
Thank you so much, guys. I had a lot of fun, and looking forward to seeing the it published everywhere and bring up my anxiety even more.
No. Yeah, this has been great. This has been something we've been trying to make happen for a while now. So I'm so excited that, you know, we got to make this happen. And I really look up to you in the space. I've been following you for a very long time. So it's an honor to have you on the show. And I hope everybody has really enjoyed this episode. Thank you all for tuning in to the NFT Catcher podcast. And we will catch you in the next one. Peace.
Thank you for tuning in to the NFT Catcher podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and learned something new about the exciting world of NFTs. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. And if you really love what you're hearing, please leave us a rating and review on your favorite platform. If you want to stay up to date with the latest news and insights from the NFT space, be sure to follow us on all the socials at NFT Catcher Pod. You can follow Jennifer at Jennifer_Pseudo and Michael at NFTicket. I'm your producer, Andy, and I'm at AJC254. Our theme song's by It's Just Los. We always appreciate your feedback and support, which helps us reach more people and bring you informative and engaging content about NFTs. We look forward to bringing you more great NFT content in future episodes. Thanks for listening. Peace.